Al Adair served at his final meeting as Summit County Council member earlier this month. He joins me now in the studio to take a look back at his short but busy political career. Good morning, Tal.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so when David Ure resigned from county council to run the school institutional trust lands, why did you want to step up to that vacancy?
You know, it's just a good opportunity to be involved in the community, get to know people, and be part of the decision-making process. I mean, the county is a pretty complex corporation, and there's a lot of moving parts. It's always good to be just to be involved in it.
Yeah. How's it been serving on the council, really, as the only Republican and the only Eastsider?
It's been great. I mean, my colleagues on the council, I came in with open arms. We had our difference of opinion, but we always work together and find out what the best solutions for the county as a whole is.
Yeah. Have you heard of any concerns? I mean, we've got Doug Clyde, who's lived on the east side for many years, but he's a Democrat.
Right. I mean, people are concerned, but I think is, you know, we in America, we get behind the people that we elect and, you know, we work with them. That's part of the process. I urge the citizens to do what they've always done and call their councilman or councilwoman and voice their concerns or what they think is going well in the county and just be involved. That's just the process that we do.
Yeah. So what was your major item of interest during your tenure?
Well, I think it's just get to know the county and push the conservative views of making sure that we're conservatively fit in both financially and other matters. You know, making sure that, you know, we don't always have to increase taxes or increase fees, that, you know, that's part of it. Everybody has a checkbook and it all has to be balanced.
Yeah, I think you agreed, though, didn't you, to raise our fees by $36?
Yes, I did. I did that. And it was hoped for to move. I mean, the garbage fee and stuff was part of the general fund. And it's more moving that away so that the public can see the actual cost of garbage collection and also, opening up a new cell at the landfill.
Yeah. Well, and then we also saw taxes go up during your tenure. Voter imposed, though, again, for the two transit and transportation taxes that were put on the ballot.
Yeah. I mean, the voters see that they didn't want to be in gridlock. And that's the great thing is they voted on it. And so the council said, okay, that's what we'll do. And be part of that. So hopefully we can make transit and a fully functioning thing, both walking, bicycles, so we're not in our cars any length of time that we don't really need to be.
Yeah. And in terms of how that mass transit could tie into South Summit, where you live, or even North Summit, I mean, what are some of the ideas for that?
Well, I think it's a fairly large concept. I mean, we have bought buses and be able to transport ourselves around Park City, but that also reaches out into the eastern county as it grows. Buses and bus routes will be available. Walking paths can also be built and have people be able to get back and forth very easily without causing gridlock.
Yeah. And we've heard from Tom Fisher even that property taxes could be going up. I mean, and I think that may be his recommendation here in the next year or so. Is that something you could get behind?
Well, I don't ever like taxes going up. I'm just like everybody else, only have so much money that's coming into home. And you know, just looking at the taxes as a whole, why would the taxes go up and the reason behind it? Is it really that important? You'd have to look I think Chris Robinson always says, devil is in the details. Looking at the details, why that has to happen, and is it in the best interest of the county as a whole?
In terms of the economic development on the east side of the county, in her exit interview, Claudia McMullen mentioned that Jeff Jones had some difficulty working on projects there. Why is that?
I think it's just in that position of the county of cost versus benefit. It does cost to bring businesses in, or if you're a business owner, it does cost to build a building or infrastructure. And it's just that tender spot of the private sector getting involved and is there enough house tops? Is there enough customers that would, you know, foster profit behind a business being in the eastern side? And it's just finding that niche as businesses grow and be part of it. And Jeff does a great job in looking at different businesses. So I know there are several business owners and people looking at the east side about coming in. It's just acquiring land and going through the zoning process.
Yeah. As an east side resident, county council still has yet to revise the East County Code. Where would you come down on that? I mean, we saw two very different thoughts about that, one being a much more dense development than what some others would like to see.
It's finding that happy balance, but I kind of land on landowners' rights. When we own a piece of property, do we have the right to develop it how we want? And also having organization within the county. You know, what is our county going to look like in the next 30, 50 years? Is it going to be gridlock, or can we develop good transportation needs, also building needs within that? So it's good management, having a little bit of vision, and also working with landowners' rights, and when you own a piece of property, what you can do with it.
Yeah, right now, though, I mean, they have, like, what, one unit per 20, one unit per 40?
Yeah, one unit per 40. In some areas, some areas is one-to-one. So, you know, it all depends on how this current zoning is and where do you sit. Do you sit in a municipality? Do you sit in the county? And how the counties and cities work together.
Yeah. Some Eastside planning commissioners felt like the county council just was not moving forward on this. I mean, what was your experience?
Well, it's a big concept. The commission was working on a couple of things. They told the council that they were working on some things. Other members of the council were kind of waiting for whether that was to come up so we could look at the whole picture all at once. And so, you know, it really doesn't matter. We need to move forward with the plan and working with the commission and what's best for the county. So in the past is the past. Let's move forward and find the best solution for Eastern Side residents, no matter where you live in the county.
So what is happening on the east side? I mean, is it becoming kind of the bedroom community for Park City?
It could be. And that's where, you know, planning comes involved. And each community, each working with each mayor, you know, we want to be good neighbors no matter where we live in the county and how that works. And so I don't think anybody wants to just be, you know, where low income or high income works, that we have diversity in all of our communities so that they function and our school teachers and police officers can live in the community that they serve.
Yeah, it's not a bad drive, I guess, until you hit the morning traffic, huh?
Right. 20 minutes to get here to KPCW from Francis this morning wasn't too bad. A little bit of slow down there in front of the high school. But, you know, if you hit it just right and you do a little bit of planning, you can get into Park City and out of Park City fairly easy.
Yeah. So your feelings about the Public Lands Initiative, or at least its effects here in Summit County, the fact that it did not get congressional approval?
Well, I think we'll just continue to be working with, you know, our congressmen and senators in the federal and what's best for the Summit County. I think we just continue to work with them. I heard this morning coming in that Bears Ears, President Obama approved the Bears Ears down the southern end of the state and how that all works with those groups down there. And will anything like that affect us here in Summit County? So, Who knows? We'll just continue to be working with our congressional officers and what's best for us.
Yeah. What was your reaction to the president's announcement yesterday about Bears Ears?
You know, Bears Ears, I think, again, landowners' rights and the rights of Utahns to own our own land is always a positive thing. I think we do quite well. We are a great footprint for the nation. We're number one in so many different issues. We manage our lands and our money and our taxes really well in this state. Why can't we manage our own lands? And so I'm pro that we are self-thinkers and we're leaders and that other states look to, and why can't we continue to do that in other facets of Utah politics?
So in other words, you're saying you don't agree with the president's decision?
I don't. I think those people, the tribe and the local citizens down there in the south end of the state could manage those lands better.
Yeah. And then when we look at the Escalante National Monument, I mean, people say, oh, well, you know, the ranching community all but died, but the tourism industry has gone gangbusters. And it seems to me that benefits a lot more people than, you know, a few cowboys.
Well, unless you're the cowboys. You know, if you have five or six generations of families that live down there. That's important to them. And I think there's, again, that's finding the balance no matter where you live and, you know, working with local citizens to find what's right. Could there have been a monument or situation that was a win-win? Maybe. But, you know, working with the president and finding what was best for everybody, I think we could have found that.
Yeah, I think the environmentalists, though, would say that, though, because they would have liked to have seen a lot more. I mean, it was 500,000 acres less than, you know, than they would have liked to have seen with
right.
Bears Ears. So.
Well, you know, I think you've seen even with environmentalists that we work together well in this state and finding that happy medium of win-win for everybody. We do that really well. I mean, we've seen it on a lot of different occasions where the environmentalists and politicians come together and work together and find what's best.
All right. Well, you remain as chairman of the Summit County Republican Party, so that continues?
That continues. So I'll continue to be involved in politics and be involved in the communities. And even if I'm not the chair of the party, I'll continue to work within that. I've gained some great friends that are currently and still on the council. I'll continue to, you know, call them and build those relationships that I've always had. It's been a great opportunity from the and thank you to the citizens of Summit County for allowing me to serve and be on the council, and it's just been a lot of fun.
Yeah. So, what work do you need to do as the chairman of the Republican Party to get another Republican elected to the Summit County Council?
I think it's just the bottom line is that people need to get involved. No matter what party you are, it takes people to run government. It takes people to be in politics and in elected positions. Is if you're interested, start thinking about it. Now is the time when you get involved and start making plans on whether to run or not to run and contact your various parties and start the process.
Okay. Tal, anything else you want to mention?
No. Thank you very much for allowing me. KPCW has always been kind, and I always look forward to coming and talking with you and look forward to a great relationship in the future.
Okay. Tal, thanks for your service and thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Well, Rich Sontag, Promontory's managing director since 1999, has announced his retirement. He joins me now in the studio. Good morning, Rich.
Good morning, Leslie.
So of all the people associated with Promontory, you would be the one, I think, who conceived, delivered, and then nurtured this development. Why leave now?
You know, I'm in my early 60s, and I've got a bucket list, and I've got a family with needs, and I've been doing this 24/7 for 17 and a half years. I mean, you know this, Leslie. I mean, this is we work very similar hours, I think, and It's the kind of thing where you reach a point where, and I don't know if this has happened with you, but I've got friends dropping right and left, and I'm starting to realize that I'm not 18 anymore, and I need to do some things, and I have family obligations, and, you know, gosh, there's so much else to do. As much as I love doing what I do, developing real estate and building Promontory, there are great people on my team who can do it just as well as me without me, great people coming along to replace me. The market is good. It's the right time for the community to make a transition like this.
Yeah. Well, you're not old enough for Medicare, though.
No, I'm not. But, you know, if I wait that long, you know, a lot of my friends didn't last that long. I mean, we lived kind of hard in our early years. And it's, you know, I feel the years. I'm not going to say that I'm not up for other challenges, but it's time to go and look for those.
All right. Well, you do have a successor name. Tell me a little bit about her.
Well, Robin Milne's a great, great woman. She's actually known the owner of Promontory for even longer than I have. I'm member number three at Promontory. She was member number four. So it's a good continuation of people who know what they're doing. And she's intimately involved in everything and has been a consultant for marketing for us previously. So it's a good transition. We've got great people. You know, we're so proud of what we've accomplished over the years out there, you know, from the early years when we were kind of told what we had to be by the county. We think that we were successful in executing that. You know, I was looking at some statistics the other day. We have generated $80 million in property taxes we've paid since 2000. You know, the impact fees to Mountain Regional alone from the development out there have been $28 million plus. Wages that we've paid our workers since 2001 have been over $73 million. And we've paid more than that in commissions to realtors, which is also an important part of our local economy. If you look at just vendor payments to businesses, and this is everybody from Cisco to the people who print our signs and do things like that, that's been $90 million since we got into business. We have built out there just our own on-site improvements, $350 million worth of stuff. And the taxable value as of the beginning of this last year of the promontory land and improvements is $1.044 billion. And that's, you know, that's not bad from something that was a cattle ranch in 1999. And, you know, we've seen a lot of growth out here, and and the future of Park City really is going to depend on having great, if you heard you talking about bedroom communities with Tal, it's going to be having bedroom communities that serve the community, that work with it, but it's also going to be partly having that second homeowner base continued in a way that doesn't all crowd into downtown and Main Street. You know, this is largely a second homeowner-driven economy and a resort-driven economy because of the way the taxes are structured here locally. You know, they pay the taxes that support the free transit for the rest of us. That's great. It's important to nurture that. It's important to welcome that. And I think we've done that kind of a community at Promontory in a way that integrates well. I mean, since day one, we've gotten our members involved in the community. They've just member charitable contributions through our Promontory Foundation are $1.1 million over the last 7 years. This has been a process of creating a plug-and-play environment for the people who live at Promontory, and I think we've done a good job at integrating them into Park City so that they feel like they're part of KPCW, they feel like they're part of Peace House, they feel like they're part of the People's Health Clinic.
Now, I used to know all of this, just the basic numbers, but I mean, what's 1,400 acres?
And it's the Promontory Spa, the specially planned area, is an 11-square-mile parcel. Promontory itself is 10 square miles of that, and we'll ultimately have 1,674, you know, homes out there, everything from cabins to large estate homes.
Yeah, and then in terms of the golf courses?
Well, there are two courses.
Two now, and with approvals up to five, though, right?
Yeah, those are the approvals. I mean, my prediction at this point is that it's going to go on being a two-course community, seeing that the market has evolved more toward other types of outdoor activities. We have a very strong golf component. We have two excellent golf courses. We're putting more and more into the other kinds of facilities. For example, we opened, you know, the Shed Clubhouse, which I think you've seen, but this summer we're opening a beach house, a beach club. And a tubing hill we're building on site as part of the conservancy. And we're doing all these other types of outdoor activities so that there are really four seasons of stuff for families to do. That being our business model was a multi-generational family model from all over the country, need things to do every time of the year.
Yeah. So what's the build-out then at this point of that 1674?
Oh, I hope to live to see it, but it's probably in, you know, the late 2020s, you know.
Yeah, and so how many units do we have of that 1674
well,
built?
Well, we have sold 920 homes and lots, and there are, I think, 470 completed homes out there, another 50 or so in under construction, and another 35 or so in design review as we speak right now. So there's a brisk building pace going on.
Yeah, and so how have things changed, you know, since 2000, you know, I mean, what we see now, I think, are people wanting smaller, more sustainable. Do you think that would change for Promontory?
Well, I think that's always been part of the vision. Again, having developed in other places, we know that people do, you know, move to periods where they want to downsize. They don't need the big place. I would tell you that most of our members at Promontory have their big place in their hometown and are looking for something much more custom, but not necessarily as large when they come here, which is why we've been so successful with the different cabins that we build. We build the smaller 2,500 square foot cabins, then we build the others that go up to 4,500 square feet, depending on what you want. But having that kind of a product for people has been very, very popular. You still do have a lot of folks, though, who come here and they say, I want to build the thing that's custom and on a great lot with a great view. And that still is the bread and butter of our business.
Yeah. Well, for a little bit of a history lesson here, as you mentioned, it used to be a cattle ranch. It was known as a Star Point Ranch. The owner was Arizona developer George Johnson. He spent a lot of time fighting and suing, I think, the county. How did you and Francis Najafi, Promontory, come in?
Well, it's interesting. You know, Sandra Day O'Connor's son is a real estate broker in Phoenix, and he brought Francis this ranch because George had finally said, you know, I've been fighting with the county for 8 years, and I'm not going to get this done. And Francis knew me, and he brought me up to look at it, and we looked at it, and he had it under option, and we came up with a plan that originally was a hybrid public resort, private resort. And through the zoning process, which again took us 3 years, the county said that, well, we want you to build something that's wholly private, wholly on, you know, your nickel, no county services, but provides incredible tax base. And they pushed us into the golf-oriented, purely second home model, which we, you know, again, that's not always an easy model to start in a new place, and this was a new market for that. But we made it work, and through some downtimes, have made it work very well.
Yeah, I think part of the agreement with the approval was the fact that you had to move it into the East County Planning District.
Right. Well, again, this is, again, there's so much history, Leslie, and you know it better than me. But historically, the Eastern County has been more or less open spaced for the benefit of the Western County. And I think that they're starting to understand that. And we've been making a move on the Planning Commission to maybe improve the zoning rules in the Eastern County so that there can actually be some economic land development that creates value and adds value. But at the time Promontory came along, there really was no economic land development base in the Eastern County. And so we were the beginning of that to try to provide that tax base for the North and South school districts and for some of the other things that desperately needed financing on the eastern side.
So you think that was a good decision? It makes sense.
I think it was very successful for what it was. I mean, you've seen there have been new campuses in North and South Summit, all sorts of great things happening in those districts. Hopefully now the districts are going to start moving towards serving what would I call the western side of the eastern side. But I think that's a process, and I think it's coming.
Yeah. At first, there was also this apprehension that the homes would be primary homes and create just a huge burden on the county. How did you resolve that?
Well, you know, in the early years, they thought that they would do it by trying to put some restrictions in effect to say that, well, you can only have so many homes that are less than 2,500 feet. You can only, I mean, there were a lot of things in the SPA plan that I think proved unnecessary once they saw who our market really is. You know, a private community is not your typical primary home. I mean, it has club fees, it has things like that, which cater to a specific market, tend to be out-of-state second homeowners, tend to be past their childbearing years, shall we say, and in a different demographic that will support this other kind of real estate. And I think that's proven out. You know, we don't have, you know, the kind of a primary component that people were afraid of and probably never will. That said, as our initial market ages, people do spend more and more time in their Plan B home, and I would call this the Plan B home for a lot of people.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about, I mean, certainly one of the black marks, if we could put one out there, was coming through the recession, Promontory declaring bankruptcy, defaulting on its money to Credit Suisse, and then coming out and looking, you guys now survive.
Yeah, you know, that was again, it's interesting, the perception. Again, we never declared bankruptcy as such. We were dragged into it by a very complicated lending scheme in which the two tiers of creditors couldn't resolve among themselves how to work out Promontory's financing. And so we ended up going through a process. But at the end of that process, we are the only large community of our type that I know of that was able to weather that process and end up under the same ownership as when it started. And that was I won't say it was an achievement. A lot of it was just hard work and timing and being good at what we do. But at the end of the day, we've recovered from that. It was a market-driven phenomenon, and none of us were happy to go through it, but I will tell you that nobody went unpaid, no local vendors went unpaid. Credit Suisse, the consortium, I would say, of hedge funds are the only people that lost on the deal.
My understanding, it was a Chapter 11.
It was a Chapter 11.
Which is bankruptcy court. So.
Yeah, oh, yes, it definitely was. All I'm saying is it wasn't voluntary on our part. We were dragged into it by the creditors.
All right.
But it was, you know, it was something that we did manage to weather successfully at the end.
Yeah, there was also, I remember, a dispute with regard to the Mountain Regional Water District and how you had to come on with that. I mean, you ended
up... Mountain Regional is a county-controlled district, and, you know, they had a tough mission, which was to pull together a bunch of failing small water districts and make an integrated system. We were, I think, in many respects, the means to an end in that regard. Because the county was able to say, look, Promontory, you want to develop You can help out Mountain Regional, and it becomes a win-win. You build a pipeline, you do all these things that tie into Mountain Regional, and then, you know, ever since, we've been sort of joined at the wrist and ankles with Mountain Regional because we are their biggest customer, we are their biggest source of funds, and by the same token, that has enabled the transport of the county's water rights from the Weber River over and through Promontory to Park City, where they actually relieve some of the water issues here in Park City. So long-term, I think it's worked out well for everybody.
Yeah. How come, and this is something that's always personally bugged me, that we built, Park City built the treatment plant, the Quinns treatment plant where it did, and just such a beautiful location. How come we didn't build a joint treatment plant? You have a treatment plant. Why couldn't we have done it together?
You know, I don't know about that because that wasn't ever brought to me. I mean, there are political silos still in Summit County. But, you know, all I know is that our part in it was, you know, ultimately to build that pipeline, allow Mountain Regional to put in its facilities, and then we actually gave up some of our water rights to wheel over to Park City to help solve the Spiro and Judge issues.
So, any final thoughts, your future plans? You say you got a long bucket list, huh?
Well, I do, and you know, I like it here in Park City, and I'm not planning to run any place soon. I, you know, have things to do. I have a lot of family obligations and things to take care of, and, you know, I have kids, and they're all over the country, and I'd like to see more of them.
Well, good.
So,
well,
thank you.
We won't see you for any more pledge drives, huh?
I don't know. Who knows? I mean, I'll still be involved, and as you know, KPCW is one of my very favorite things in Park City, has always been.
Well, thank you. We appreciate your great support of the station as well, Rich.
Thank you, Leslie.
Well, last year during the Sundance Film Festival, a 50-year-old man collapsed on Main Street. A bystander did CPR and used an AED, known as an automated external defibrillator, and saved the man, unfortunately. I should say, fortunately, that is a rare occurrence. Most people don't know what to do when somebody around them is having a heart attack. There is now a new initiative to give Park City residents those life-saving skills. In the studio to explain, I have Dr. Scott McIntosh. He's the medical director of Summit County and Park City Emergency Medical Systems, along with Eric Hales, battalion chief for Park City Fire District. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So we mentioned that incident last year on Main Street. Somebody, Scott, knew about the AED and was able to go find it and use it?
Yes, and that's an incident where everything went perfectly. You know, someone on the street, a bystander, was able to do CPR right away, and then someone else was able to find the AED and shock them from a disorganized heart rhythm into a more life-sustaining rhythm. Then the paramedics arrived and were able to get them to the hospital where he ended up surviving. Although that's the perfect incident. A lot of times people don't know what to do or they're not confident in their abilities and therefore just kind of stand around and don't do the vital actions that are important to save someone's life.
Right. And when we think about those AEDs, I mean, we see them, you know, on TV and it's like, you know, clear, you know, before somebody does it. And I think that's a frightening thing to do, what much less witness, huh?
It is, and our first point right now is to get people knowledgeable and used to just doing CPR and compressions. You're right, the AEDs are a little bit more complicated, but really not that much. But the thing we want to start right now is to try to get everyone in the Park City community trained in CPR, and that's why we, in association with United Fire Authority in Salt Lake, have put together this 10-minute video to teach people how to do proper CPR.
Okay, so that video, Eric, is online?
Yes. So if you go to pcfd.org, you can see, have the link to this YouTube video that we put together with the Unified Fire Authority and a project that they put together called pushtosurvive.org. There's also a link on that website as well. And what this is just gives folks exposure to how to do hands-only CPR, and it's very simple. So video's less than 10 minutes. You can use a couch cushion, and it basically uses it. We have one of our firefighter paramedics and one of our advanced EMTs from Summit County kind of narrating you through what to do.
Yeah. You know, and there are classes now and then, and I've had to take, a CPR first aid class for a number of reasons. But they're expensive. I mean, it's like $75 and you get your card for only Two years. Is there a way maybe to reduce the fee and maybe get more people educated?
So this is part of our initiative. There are these classes that you have to take, whether it's for your employment or what have you, and you just want to be certified through the American Heart Association. They do not, you know, they have their fees that they charge us that we kind of have to pass along. We do offer those American Heart Association courses actually twice a month. On the first Tuesday and the second Wednesday of each month, we'll do either a CPR AED course or a first aid course. But one of our initiatives for 2017 is to kind of get this hands-only piece that only takes 5 minutes out. And we were just talking about ways of, you know, we have our EMTs and paramedics standing by during the different festivals and special events. We're just going to have this video rolling in the background. And if people want to come up and practice on some dummies on how to actually perform, do CPR, hands-only CPR, that's going to be kind of our initiative. And that will be free to the public.
Yeah, kind of the whole mouth-to-mouth resuscitation has gone out the window, right?
And for the most part, yes, and for the public, yes. One of the things that we want to do to the Park City for the Park City community is to make CPR more accessible. So we see a lot of people who are on their phones all day texting and playing games, and we're encouraging people to take 10 minutes out of their day to learn CPR, to learn something that they can save a life with. They can do it on their phone at any time when they're waiting for the bus, when they're, you know, on a chairlift even. They can do that anytime, and it's so easy to learn, and it's something that is very important to the community. You know, your family and friends depend on you and your bystanders to hopefully help save a life.
Yeah, and some of us freak out during emergencies, so, I mean, the more practice, the better, right? Just a little bit more comfortable with it all.
Yes.
Yeah. My understanding is that you guys kind of brought this out this time of year. More people have heart attacks during the holidays during any other time of the year. Is that true?
It's hard to say exactly when people are having heart attacks, but you know, when it's a little bit more cold, when there's a little bit more stress on the body, a little bit more emotional and working stress, a lot of times the heart attacks come out when the snow comes out, when people are shoveling their driveways. That sometimes happens. So, you know, this is a time that we can think about heart attacks, but also think about the next year and maybe, you know, learning some skills that can help help those people who are in need.
Yeah, I think Park City Municipal installed 3, maybe 4 AEDs around town.
Actually, 4. We in 2015 we partnered with it was Tate Shaw came up with this idea, and we partnered with him, and we actually helped place 4 AEDs throughout the community, and you know, those are located in City Park, Miners Plaza on Main Street. That's the device that was used during the Sundance incident, out at the Quinn Sports Complex, and then at McPullen Farm. It's right there. So that was a great initiative, and obviously it paid off for our community. We are trying to work with Basin Rec, Brian Hanton out there, as well as put in for a grant to have additional AEDs placed out in the trailheads and the communities, you know, out in the Snyderville Basin as well. So that's something we definitely support on their behalf.
So at this point, it was RAP tax money, I think you were
yes,
trying to get. You
exactly.
Don't know the status of that at this point.
When I spoke to him a week or so ago, he was still in the grant process, so hopefully they get that needed support and we can move forward with that.
All right. Now, can you harm somebody using an AED if you don't know what you're doing?
You can't, and that's the good thing about AEDs, that they are very smart devices. They are, all you do is you push the button on the device and it powers up and it walks you through everything. It gives you voice commands and it has pictures that you can follow. You peel off 2 pads, you place them on their chest, and it analyzes the rhythm and tells you what to do, and it actually does everything for you from there on out. So they're very easy devices to learn as long as you have just a very basic knowledge of them, and you are not able to harm anyone.
Yeah, if somebody's wearing jewelry, that's okay.
That's fine.
Okay, yes. I'd always heard that you got to have the jewelry off, but no.
Well, it's that's fine.
You need to place the patches on the bare chest, and from there, basically the AED will walk you through. And if that person is not in need of that life-saving shock, then it won't do that. It will continue to prompt you through the steps of CPR until responders arrive. But they also need to remember that not only do they need to know how to do CPR, know how to access an AED, but also to call 911 and get the emergency responders. You know, that's an important link in that chain of survival to get the responders on their way.
And one of the final things that I want to leave people with is that the most important thing that you can do is to do something, is to do CPR, even if you're not, if it's foggy in your memory, do CPR as well as you can. Try to get an AED and call 911. Is to be active, and that's one of the things that we're trying to encourage people to do.
All right, Dr. Scott McIntosh and Eric Hale again. It's pcfd.org. Go practice your CPR skills. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to the Local News Hour. It's 8:51. Well, after nearly 9 years as executive director of the Kimball Arts Center, Robin Marouche will step down from that role and join the Kimball Arts Center's board of directors to focus specifically on raising money for a permanent home for the arts organization. She joins me now in the studio along with the chair of the board, Maggie Abdu-Haidar. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
Robin, let's just talk a little bit about what went into your decision to step down. I know that this has been a dream job for you.
It really has, and I'll continue to be very involved. I was just at that point where we wanted to take the next step with the building, and a friend of mine is the co-founder of Backcountry.com, and he always said that in business, the two key ingredients of success are focus and execution, and transitioning my role so that I can really just focus on the building and finding the permanent site and getting her done will be the best use of my time and effort, and we're really excited about it.
Yeah. We'll talk a little bit more about that. Maggie, what's the plan for Robin's replacement?
Well, after getting over the shock of losing her, I think we've come to see it as a chance to have a two-for-one. We're very excited that Robin will join the board and bring her energy and her creativity and her communication skills and all that, I mean, the skill set that has really made her a fantastic executive director to the board. We will begin the search for a new executive director at the beginning of this year.
All right. But you hope to be stepped down onto the board by February?
That's right. There's no hard line in the sand because this is going to be a collaborative, iterative process. But February seems like the right time, and we're doing strategic planning and long-range planning right now. And to have the new director be able to have a voice in that will be key as well. And new ideas and fresh perspective will strengthen the organization. So we're really doubling down.
Yeah. So what do you think the most important qualities will be in your replacement? And if you're kind of taking on the role of fundraising and, you know, new development, this person will focus on the arts and organization?
That's correct. And someone who has strategic planning experience, because we've got a great team at the Kimball now. Kathy Kennedy will stay on as managing director and handle the operations, and our department heads are all really talented. So if this person has strategic planning ability to take us into the next 10 years as we grow for the new facility. And, you know, this is of, by, and for the community, but this is also going to be an arts center with national chops.
All right. Well, 2 years ago, you helped facilitate the sale of the Old Town Kimball Art Center for more than $5 million. We never heard a price tag, but that was always the word on the street, more than $5 million. How much more money do you need to raise?
We don't know yet because it will be site-specific, the building that we're going to build. But certainly, we did create an endowment with some of those funds. But we're going to need to raise, we don't know yet, but somewhere in $10 to $20 million. So it's significant.
That's a big or very fancy art center.
Again, it's site-specific, and so until we choose the land, we don't know how much the land is going to be, and then a building on top of that. We certainly are very blessed to have some money to start out with, so we're in a very fortunate position.
What is the status, though, of the permanent home? We had heard at Planning Commission that you will likely have a new building in the BOPA development, not too far from, or in fact, very near where you are now.
Well, we are considering multiple different options right now, and the Prospector area is one of those many, many areas that we're considering. We're fortunate to have multiple options, and people are coming to us on a daily basis almost to make suggestions about where we might live. And that being said, we are committed to trying to make a decision this spring so that we can get started.
So, Robin, as you look over the last 9 years, I mean, mostly good experience, huh?
Excellent experience. In fact, my reason for taking the job was to focus on community and relationship building. And we've forged a lot of alliances and a lot of collaborative partnerships in the community. And we're going to continue that. And I reached out to the Kimball family to tell them the news this week and let them know we're just going to continue their father's legacy of creating this community center that is going to be such an asset and a vital amenity for this town.
Yeah. At the same time, I think there was a devastating blow that when you realized that you were not going to be able to build that Dream Art Center, that you had gone through that long design process competition that you had. I mean, that was a huge disappointment, I think, huh?
But it's true. It's true. But in life, you do find out when you have the 2020 ability to look back and say, it's good that that happened because it made us stronger, and challenge often does that. And we would not have learned what we learned along the way about what you can do with space when it's not a restriction. And we've been able to experiment in this temporary location and try things that we wouldn't have otherwise been able to try. And it's cliche, but it turned out to be a blessing.
Yeah. So when it all comes down to it, I mean, would you be homeless at one point? You know, I mean, if you were to stay in the Bonanza Park area, I mean, all that comes down. You'd have to go somewhere else if a new building were to be built there?
Well, that's the location. We've spoken to Mark Fisher, who's been amazing around helping us think about the planning. And so we would be able to work it out so that we could stay in the building while the new building was being built and then transition over. So we wouldn't be homeless. We're not going to go dark in the community. That's why we had the temporary location, and the art will continue on.
Okay. So you stepped down from a paid position then to a volunteer position on the board then. You're going to be doing this just to do it.
It's really my passion to make sure that I help do what I can to see this come to fruition. It's been a dream in the making, and we are expanding our resources this way. Like I said, doubling down.
And then I'm guessing you already started the planning for Arts Festival, but that's something that the new person would have to take on. Yeah, I mean, that's a big deal.
Absolutely.
Fundraiser of the year.
Yeah, that's right. But Dave March is in charge of that on our team, and he's already got that underway. And we're going to be taking applications, already are taking applications for next year. We've already got like almost 200 artists that have applied for next year, so it is well underway. So that person will be well taken care of to be. And I'll be the liaison between the board and the staff position as well. I'm not going anywhere. Continue to raise my family in this community and be a part of it. I'll be in their hair more than they probably want.
Okay.
Possible.
In the meantime, you've got the pop art exhibit through January
2nd.
Okay.
Yeah, so run over.
Okay.
And we are open every day but January 1st.
Okay. Well, congratulations on a job well done, and I'm sure we'll see more of you.
Thank you, Leslie. If you know of a great candidate, let us know.
Okay. Maggie and Robin, thank you. KPCW News Time now, 9 o'clock.